Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. When George W. Bush headed west on Wednesday to raise millions of dollars for his election, his campaign enjoyed one of the greatest recent bargains in American politics, all-day use of Air Force One for the price of a few first-class airfares. Although the trip had an explicitly political purpose, taxpayers will pick up most of the expenses. The Republican National Committee estimates the cost of flying Air Force One at $35,000 or more per hour, but federal rules require the Bush-Cheney campaign to reimburse the government only for the cost of a first-class plane ticket for Bush and a handful of political aides who accompany him. The Federal Election Commission yesterday set in motion regulatory proceedings that could severely restrict new pro-democratic groups seeking to defeat George W. Bush. The proposed regulations would severely crimp the fundraising and spending activities of 527 groups named for the section of the tax code that governs their activities. But advocates of the tough regulations suffered a setback when a Democratic commissioner in a position to cast the key swing vote said she is likely to oppose any changes in the rules that would take effect before the November elections. The Republican National Committee is pressing the six-member commission to rule that a network of pro-democratic organizations with a plan to spend as much as $300 million this year, most of it soft money, is breaking the law. The federal grand jury probing the leak of a covert CIA officer's identity has subpoenaed records of Air Force One telephone calls in the week before the officer's name was published in a column in July. Contained in three grand jury subpoenas are requests to the executive office of George W. Bush for records created in July by the White House Iraq Group, a little-known internal task force established in August 2002 to create a strategy to publicize the threat posed by Saddam Hussein. Also, the subpoenas ask for a transcript of White House spokesman Ari Fleischer's July 12th press briefing in Nigeria, missing from the official White House website, but recently discovered in a scoop by the pro-democracy site TakeBackTheMedia.com. More after this.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
The Church of England is seeking a virtual vicar for its first internet parish. The Diocese of Oxford is advertising for a web pastor to lead a virtual congregation when it rolls out its new online church at www.ichurch.org. Offering daily online worship, a daily reading, and prayers, the church is intended to appeal to folks who desire to be part of a congregation but cannot or are unwilling to join a traditional parish. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The Bushites and their corporate sponsors are quick to demand that science, not politics, should be the sole basis for making regulatory policies. Of course, the question is, whose science? The corporate-funded science or the genuine product of independent scientists? For example, after a mad cow outbreak last December, a panel of international scientists was convened by Ag Secretary Ann Veneman to review America's beef production system. She expected the panel to rubber stamp the beef industry myth that America has no real mad cow problem and that our safety rules are more than adequate. But, holy Big Mac, the panel found that mad cow disease is common in our cattle herds, that USDA's voluntary tracking system is grossly inadequate, and that the meat industry's method of feeding rendered hogs, chickens, and other animals to cattle is inherently unsafe. It called for a major strengthening of the regulatory system. The Bushites and industry responded to this scientific finding by playing politics. Industry lobbyists blindly reiterated the absurd claim that mad cow poses no risk to consumers. They decried the scientists' report as negative in tone, and they asserted that the best policy was not to get regulators involved, but letting the industry address these things. The Bushites bowed to the politics, stiffing the science and us. Why? Because they are the industry. Secretary Veneman previously was a corporate agribusiness lawyer and lobbyist, and now her chief of staff, her top spokeswoman, and the head of her agency's regulatory programs all came from top positions in the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the industry's main lobbying front. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that meat processors and corporate cattle operators have put nearly $1 million into Bush's presidential campaign? The Bushites can talk about science till the cows come home, but their policies are all about politics.
LendingTree.com presents How to Be in Total Control of the Home Buying Process. Method 1, own your own real estate company.
I'm rich!
Method 2, come to LendingTree.com, where you can get a mortgage and a real estate agent at the same time. Just fill out one simple form and choose from up to 4 agents and mortgage offers. Call 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. See website for details and state license disclosures. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, and all around the planet on radiopower.org. Streaming across the United States on the Sirius satellite radio system, on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast. Boy, a lot in the news today. It's Friday, by the way. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever's appropriate for you. 232 days ago, Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, the CIA agent, who was a major cog in a large international operation that the CIA ran against terrorism, specifically as part of a counterterrorism operation. And they had set up this phony corporation that she was an officer in, with offices offshore all around the world. And the whole thing got shut down. Heaven only knows how many people who were affiliated with it might have been killed or harmed. The CIA doesn't talk about this stuff. She was outed. She's rendered ineffective, and the corporation had to be shut down. Robert Novak, of course, did this to punish, the Republicans, the White House did this to punish Joe Wilson for having written an op-ed in the New York Times saying that there was no uranium coming from Niger to Iraq, and the thing was phony. And of course, George Bush now is being subpoenaed. His Air Force One records, we discover today, the Air Force One telephone records have been subpoenaed by the commission that's looking into this thing, and the prosecutor who's looking into it. Of course, Bush is not real concerned that a senior administration official has committed treason.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No, but the prosecutors have an idea, and they're looking at the phone logs for White House One. That ought to give George some ideas. As so many people have said from day one, all he'd have to do is say to his staff, okay, who did it? But apparently that's not happening. Anyhow, lots of news. Representative Tom Cole says a vote against Bush is a vote for bin Laden. it's like a vote for Hitler, right? John Kerry, the Nazi. Now, grasping at straws is too gentle a phrase to use for, I think, the pickle that some of these guys think they're in. And legitimately so. Turns out now that we're finding that the Republicans not only spied on the Democrats for a year and a half, hacking into the computers of half a dozen different senators,
but that they were selectively spying. They were culling out information about the Judiciary Committee nominees. You know, as the Republicans kept feeding these extreme right-wingers to the Senate and saying, you know, hey, here you go. The Democrats were organizing. Well, I'm going to get into that in more detail later. I just want to touch on some of the headlines here. And Ralph Nader, of course, is in the news. They're saying, according to the polls now, Kerry's slightly ahead of Bush, but neither one of them are over 50%. And, well, actually, no, Kerry is slightly behind Bush, and neither of them are over 50%. So if you were to take the Nader vote and add it to Kerry, of course, Kerry would win. But with Nader in the race, it looks right now like it might be a repeat of 2000. Won't that be interesting? Anyhow, I want to get into something that I think is really, you know, a lot of this is kind of sparring. You know, it's like my team versus your team, and I'm really not part of the Democratic team. I mean, I absolutely believe that we have to get George Bush out of office, that he's harming American democracy. He and the right wingers who have bought into and I think sincerely bought into this pseudo libertarian philosophy. That there's such a thing as a free market, and that if you simply let corporations basically make all the decisions, that ultimately the best is gonna work out for the country. It's a tragedy that Ronald Reagan bought into this. It's a tragedy that George Bush Sr. was forced to dance that tune, even though he did back off considerably, and he was right calling it voodoo economics in the beginning. And it's a tragedy for the United States and for the world that that George Jr. here, George III, the third George to be president of the United States, Washington, daddy and son, that George III has created a situation so bad that in America people are talking about a revolt against George III. They revolt, of course, in the polls in November. And this is one of the things that I think is going to be driving it. Just weeks after this, from the Center for American Progress, just weeks after the president predicted the nation would add 320,000 jobs each month of this year, the Department of Labor reported this morning that, quote, America's unemployment rate remains stuck at 5.6% in February as the economy added a paltry 21,000 positions, end quote. Not only did the new jobs report fall short of the White House's explicit promise, but it fell short even of Wall Street's conservative expectations of 125,000 jobs. Nearly 8.2 million people remain out of work, and last month alone, 400,000 jobless stopped looking for work because the economy has become so bleak. This is the highest average duration of joblessness in well over 20 years, as long as they've been keeping records, basically. And the already decimated manufacturing sector lost another 3,000 jobs last month. Well, you know, at the same time, George Bush is continuing his happy talk. He was out in California yesterday talking about, you know, in Bakersfield, California, city with an unemployment rate of 12.8%. And saying that here's a quote from the. He rhapsodized about the possibility that a stock car firm in Bakersfield will add two new jobs this year. He said that this was, and I quote, really good news. And I quote, George W. Bush, a sign a lot of people are confident about our future, end quote. It's, well, you know, it's not funny, really. And E.J. Montini is a reporter, a writer with the Arizona Republic. And he wrote a compelling piece in the Arizona Republic, the newspaper out of, I believe, Phoenix. Anonymous Voice of America's Unemployed. And he came home. He says, it begins, I want to just share the piece of this with you. He says, it begins with the automated voice of my telephone answering machine, saying that a call came in at 9:37 a.m. on Tuesday and that it lasted 2 minutes, which is the point where the caller's message is automatically cut off. He then writes down some of the caller's message, but he also put it on his website, and he said, I would like America to hear this. And in fact, I'm going to share a little with more with you about what he said about it after you hear it. But this is a two-minute call that this reporter at the Arizona Republic got from one of us. We, the middle class of America. And therefore, he wrote this article called The Anonymous Voice of America's Unemployed. Just listen to this.
Voice call received.
It starts out with his machine.
7 a.m. Tuesday, March 2nd. 2 minutes to listen. Press 0.
I'm calling in and I'm promising myself not to cry, but you're always right about things that are going on in the current events. I'm wondering, has anybody noticed in America, all of us that are unemployed? I'm 43 years old and I've been working since I was 16. My husband is 45. We've been married 22 years and we've always worked. A year ago, I lost my job. 6 months ago, his job was outsourced to India. We have 3 children. One that's 18, and we were going to try to help them get through college. But anyway, I just wondered, there's so many of us, and people don't seem to notice what's going on. And nobody, see, I read the paper, and I don't see a lot of people writing about it. And I know there's a lot of them out there because I talk to my friends every day that I used to work with, and there are no jobs. And it just seems like somebody ought to write that a lot of jobs have gone overseas, and there's no jobs in this country for people that have worked all their lives. And, yesterday I was on the phone looking around for shelters because we've got another 2 months before we're going to get thrown out of our house. And we were part of that middle class section there. I never thought this was supposed to happen to us. And I know there's a lot of people out there like us. So anyway, it'd be neat if somebody would write and make the country aware that, I feel like invisible. You go to the grocery store and it's like, see, we were an invisible section, but I think there's like millions of us. So anyway, somebody ought to write about it. And you always write about everything and you make it good. And nobody hears us. So
to respond or forward, press 1. To delete, press star D.
And then his machine. E.J. Montini, his article in the Arizona Republic yesterday, the anonymous voice of America's unemployed, he wraps up after quoting from what you just heard. He says, then the machine cuts are off and the automated voice tells me to respond or forward, press 1, to delete, press star D, to skip, press the pound key. If I could transfer her message to each of you, A.J. writes, I would. I'd also send it to Bush and to Kerry and to every congressman and senator. You can listen to it yourself by typing newsmultimedia.azcentral.com on the address line of your computer and following the instructions. He continues, we are America too, after all. Too bad we are a country that does not listen very well, even when we are talking to ourselves. He goes on to point out that he thinks that this is what the election is going to be about in November. I think he's absolutely right. And he ends the article, this poignant paragraph. He says, and although she didn't leave a name and number, I knew when she got cut off and my answering machine was listing my options that I wanted to respond to her message, wanted to forward it, had no intention of deleting it, and could not skip it. The anonymous voice of America's unemployed by E.J. Montini in the Arizona Republic yesterday. Now, that's one side of the story. The other side of the story from yesterday's Wall Street Journal, article by Ann Zimmerman. Walmart stores said its board increased its annual dividend by 44%, joining a number of companies that are putting more cash in investors' hands at a time when dividend tax rates have been cut. Walmart is going to be paying 52 cents a share. Now, the Walmart family owns 1.68 billion shares. You can do the math on that. This is going to increase their annual payout to $2.25 billion that Walmart is paying to their shareholders. The Wall Street Journal then kind of poignantly adds, the company's executives and many employees are substantial shareholders and stand to benefit directly from the higher dividend. The largest beneficiaries of the dividend increase will be the founding Walton family. The 2003 tax relief law, which President Bush signed in May, slashed the personal tax rate on corporate dividends to 15% from a maximum of 39.1%. No, 15% taxes, no payroll taxes for the Walton family. And this woman has no job. Welcome to America. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. 20 past the hour. We'll be right back.
research documents the importance of evolution when diseases jump from animals to people. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of people were worried last year about a brief outbreak of monkeypox, and there's concern now about a new outbreak of SARS. There's good reason for the attention. Each disease involves a nasty virus that jumped from animals to people and seriously threatens the health of anyone who gets infected. If a new disease can be kept from spreading, it can stop an epidemic in the short term, but health officials might need to pay more attention to the potential of some viruses to evolve once they enter the human population. A recent article in the journal Nature examines the importance of evolution in turning some viruses into serious threats to public health. Rustam Antia is a biologist at Emory University in Atlanta, and he worked on the study. He says people are part of the problem with these emerging diseases. In some cases, people are living in much closer proximity to animals that carry disease. In addition, crowded cities make it easier for the disease to spread from one person to another.
We have an enormous number of changes, and many of these changes lead to increased contact between humans, and things that lead to increased contact between humans will lead to this increased spread of existing pathogens and also the emergence of new pathogens.
Antia and his colleagues developed mathematical models that evaluate the risk of a virus mutating into a form that could cause an epidemic. Antia says this research might not produce immediate cures for diseases like SARS and monkeypox, but it does explain more about how infectious diseases spread, and that can lead to more effective methods of controlling them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or food insecurity.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Walk your street, and I walk mine. And should we meet? Would you spare me some time? 'Cause you should see my world, meet my kind, before you judge all mine. Blue collar.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. The number of unemployed workers in the United States who have exhausted regular jobless benefits, this from the San Francisco Chronicle, without qualifying for more, was expected to reach a record 760,000 by the end of last month, and that number could swell to more than 1 million by mid-year. They quote Isaac Shapiro, a senior fellow at the Washington think tank. This is an article by Diane Lewis in the Boston Globe. Actually, it was reprinted in the San Francisco Chronicle. Isaac Shapiro, a senior fellow at the Washington think tanks of Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, says, by all indications, the number of people who have exhausted benefits but are ineligible for a federal extension is at a record high. He says, in 1991 and 92, when we had high levels of unemployment, isn't it interesting that people refer to the two major periods, I mean, of really, really bad unemployment in the United States? It's fascinating. There's a couple of sites out there that have graphs of this stuff. One was in the 1920s, the 1930s, rather, starting in 1929. And the other was the early 90s, 91, 92. And people don't, for some reason, refer to that as the administration of George Bush Sr. I don't know why. But it was. And what you were seeing in that incredible, fall off in jobs, that recession, the mini depression, I mean, it lost him the election of 91 and 92, was the consequences of the conservative economic policies that Ronald Reagan had been hyping and that George Bush was trying to recover from in some small ways, but also was wed to because he had to cater to his base and he had to keep his donors happy. I have a feeling Poppy Bush found himself in a very uncomfortable position. Anyhow, as Shapiro says, in 91 and 92, when we had high levels of unemployment, there was a program in place that qualified just about everybody for extended benefits. This time, the exhaustion level is very high, but there is nothing in place. No, Newt Gingrich took care of that for us. Wondering where all the money went? Now, where I want to go with this, and I'm going to do it right after the next break. And so, our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. But please hold your calls for a little bit. I want to share with you some history on this stuff, and I want you to hear the voice of one of our former presidents. But I want to set it up right. This year, last year there were 111 billionaires. A billion is $1,000 million in your pocket, right? To be a billionaire, you got to have that cash. There were 111 billionaires in the United States last year. Then we had the third year in a row of George Bush's tax cuts for the rich. And this year we have 587 billionaires, up from 111. These 587 people added $1.9 trillion to their wealth during the past 12 months. That's $1,900 billion that they added to what they already owned in the past 12 months. And much of it was dividend income, which was taxed at a 15% rate. And this is, and the person who writes to me about this, he says, is capitalism a system to enable a few to amass staggering sums? I say, no. You know, capitalism works. The problem is let me get into that in detail right after this break. The problem, because the problem is extraordinary. Folks, this is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolph Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
3 years ago, the Bush administration directed federal agencies to review government jobs and identify those that could be privatized. But a new study from the General Accounting Office finds most agencies have spent the time parsing the rules of the policy rather than actually cutting jobs. The GAO says inadequate funding to conduct the privatization plan, as well as frequent changes to its guidelines, have hampered the effort. Yet the study examined seven agencies, which contain more than 80% of all federal jobs. Of the 17,000 jobs considered for contracting, in more than three-quarters of the cases, it found government employees were more efficient and cost-effective than contractors.
Public transport in Minneapolis-St. Paul ground to a halt yesterday as 2,200 drivers, mechanics, bus cleaners, and clerical workers with the Twin Cities Metro Transit walked out on strike. Local 1005 of the Amalgamated Transit Union has gone since August without a new contract, and after managers with Metro Transit refused to either submit to binding arbitration or to accept a contract extension, members struck. Michelle Summers is vice president of the local.
Unfortunately, their attitude all along has been take it or leave it. They have threatened to impose, and the members just have not accepted that. We have said we want a fair deal, and we're going to be out as long as it takes to get that.
Like so many other labor disputes these days, the Twin Cities transit strike involves issues of health care. Metro Transit managers want to roll back the number of workers who qualify for retiree health coverage, and they want employees to shoulder more of the cost of the coverage.
As the hype builds for this year's Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece, labor rights advocates are using the occasion to increase pressure on sweatshop practices around the globe. The British NGO Oxfam just released a comprehensive report into the production practices of major athletic clothing companies like Adidas, Nike, Puma, Reebok, and Umbro. It found all run sweatshops. Conditions in Bulgaria, Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Turkey, and Thailand were singled out for special criticism, where it's commonplace for garment workers to spend as long as 18 hours a day at work and are paid well under what's considered a local living wage. Oxfam says if the Olympics is truly serious about showcasing the best of human achievement, it should not allow athletes to perform in clothing whose manufacture results in human exploitation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep.
Hopefully the song for George W.
sleep won't come.
Might be. Come November.
The whole night through.
Oh, yeah. Yes, George W., be listening to America's unemployed, who you are ignoring so easily and so readily. This is Tom Hartman, 26 minutes before the hour. We're back with you. And 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Chris in Phoenix is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate that. Tom, I just had a real quick question for you, and then I'll hang up and just listen to your response.
Sure.
I'm a registered Republican. I'm a middle-class society. I'm not wealthy by any means, but I live fine. I have to plead ignorance here and explain it to me. I'm younger generation, so maybe I don't understand as much as some of the more political people. But with the tax cuts that came down, which you were referencing, I've heard a lot of people on a lot of the stations reference them as tax cuts for the rich. But I mean, I remember getting my check in the mail, and I'm by no means the rich society. Can you explain, if you would mind, like I said, for those of us not quite as educated on it, how is my tax cut any different than what the upper class society received?
Well, the big problem, Chris, isn't so much that there were tax cuts, but the fact that there were no tax cuts. What there was a massive borrowing, trillions of dollars from your children and mine, which was then delivered to those of us who received reductions in our income tax rates or checks back. There was no tax cut.
Okay, so how did that benefit? And again, I'm not arguing the point. I'm just not understanding completely.
Sure.
How does that benefit, in a percentage-wise, how does that benefit someone much wealthier than me versus me? Again, just in a percentage-wise.
Well, why do you have to calculate it on a percentage-wise basis? I mean,
because if a guy's worth $1 million and he gets $1,000 back, and I'm worth, you know, $200,000 and I get, you know, $600 or $400 back, I don't understand.
Okay, here's my take on it, Chris.
Yes.
Many years ago, I ran a business that was generating millions of dollars and had a number of employees, and we were using a lot of, and I was making good money, and we were using a lot of the resources of America. I was using the public education system in every single person I hired. I was using the public roads and every single person who drove to work for me. I was using the infrastructures of our telephone system. I was using the court system to enforce contracts. I mean, I never went into court to do it, but it was there.
Sure.
It allowed me
sure.
to operate a business. So I was using the infrastructure of America more heavily than the people who were working for me who were making less.
Okay.
So therefore, I feel that it's appropriate that I be paying more tax because of that.
Sure, agreed.
Okay, so that's my point. That's it. I mean, and that's why I say the whole thing of a flat tax is just a phony argument so that those people who are really sucking up the resources of society, I mean, what we all agree on is that the whole purpose of being able to do business together, of playing the game of business, is ultimately to benefit society, not just to benefit one individual. We let individuals benefit themselves because it ultimately will benefit society. I mean, that's the big picture rationale. It has to be. If it's not that way, you have cancer instead of a living organism. If you just let one particular organism, you know, one particular part of
sure.
a system eat the entire system, and that's what we have right now. The conservative economic philosophy has led to a cancer in our economy. Walmart is part of that cancer.
Oh, agreed.
And it's harming us. It's destroying us. And so that's my point. So have I answered your question, Chris?
I think so. And again, I wasn't calling to discredit anyone or argue. I actually didn't want to go on the air. I was just looking for some clarity so I could understand it a little
yeah,
bit
no,
better
I appreciate
on how it benefited the rich more than it benefited me, given our both, you know.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate your sincerity. Your phone is breaking up there, so I'm going to drop you. But I appreciate that. And I don't mind if people call up and argue with me. And you know, I mean, you think I'm nuts? Call me and tell me. I'll take the call. What Chris's call brilliantly illustrated is that the wisdom of our grandparents' generation has been lost. The answer that I gave to Chris is the answer that my grandfather understood well. I think my father understands it well. We wouldn't have had the consensus that we had in the 1930s about doing what Roosevelt did to bring us out of the Great Depression and create the stage for the greatest growth and expansion of the largest middle class in the history, not just of America, but of the world, if everybody hadn't understood this stuff. And we've had, you know, 15 years now of conservative right-wing talk radio out there ranting about, you know, spreading this theory. It's a religion. The conservative economic philosophy, it's a religion. Much of it goes back to Ayn Rand, although much of it actually, you know, goes back to the ideas of kings and feudal lords and these kinds of things. And FDR understood this, and Americans understood this. And I want to share some pieces from FDR's 1936 acceptance speech with you. Just, you know, we need to know this stuff. Americans need to remember these things. And first of all, he starts out by setting up the situation by talking about what is freedom. Right? Cons love to talk about freedom. I'm a conservative. I'm all in favor of freedom. Yes, I think every liberal I know is all in favor of freedom. What is freedom? What does it mean?
that very word, freedom, in itself and of necessity suggests freedom from some restraining power. In 1776, we sought freedom from the tyranny of a political autocracy, from the 18th century royalists who held special privileges from the crown.
See, so, and those special privileges, by the way, were economic. I mean, he's talking about the Boston Tea Party. Everybody understood back in the 1930s the Boston Tea Party was a revolt against a tax cut. I'm serious. Go back and read your history books. The Tea Act of 1773 that sparked the Boston Tea Party was a reduction in the tax on tea for the British East India Company. And the East India Company was fixing to put out of business thousands of small entrepreneurs up and down the East Coast of America who were importing tea on their own. And they said, no, we're not going to allow you to pull a Walmart. So anyhow, Roosevelt continues. He defined freedom. Freedom means a freedom from a restraining force. Now, what are the restraining forces that we're facing? And where have they come from?
But since that struggle, man's inventive genius released new forces in our land, forces which reordered the lives of our people. The age of machinery, of railroads, of steam and electricity, the telegraph and the radio, mass production, mass distribution, all of these combined to bring forward a new civilization, and with it a problem for those who sought to remain free.
See, it's coming around. I'm telling you, these things are cyclical. Here we are again.
For out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties.
See, this is the economic royalists. This is the same as the East India Company.
New kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things. Through new uses of corporations and banks and securities, new machinery of industry and agriculture, of labor and capital, all undreamed of by the fathers, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service.
He's talking about the Gilded Age and the Roaring Twenties, which brought with it a very small middle class, a lot of very working poor. I mean, you know, go back and watch Leonardo DiCaprio's movie about the streets of New York, and the era, the Gilded Age and through the Roaring, of that era where we had this extreme concentrations of wealth on the one hand and a very little middle class and a lot of people desperate for jobs on the other. He continues.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
Yeah. And see, this is, and the not free enterprise is a real critical part of this. And so then he asked the question, what does this have to do with democracy? What do we have to do with this? What, you know, why is this important?
The royalists I have spoken of, the royalists of the economic order, have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business.
Just as they're saying now. Just as they're, this is the song and dance you'll hear on all the con shows, right?
They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work and his right to live.
Yeah, and see, this is the fundamental schism in philosophy, where the cons say, no, government really doesn't have a role to play. You don't want government involved in things like protecting labor unions, that is, protecting the right of individuals to organize, individual laborers to organize. Why? Well, because we prefer all the power with the corporations. And Roosevelt says, no, we're not going to have it that way. We're going to allow people to play the game of business, but they're going to have to play it with some restraints. They're going to have to play it by rules that will work. And then he points out that when he promoted this, these economic royalists kicked back. I mean, they called him communist, they called him socialist, they tried a coup d'etat against him in 1932. And here he continues.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America.
Does this sound familiar? Is this starting to sound familiar? I mean, it's just, here we are again, and he continues.
What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power.
And that is the bottom line. It's all ultimately about power. Who's going to hold the power? And the function of government in Roosevelt's mind, and in my mind, is to maintain balance between the power of labor and the power of a corporation. It's actually of aggregated wealth, of aggregated capital. He continues.
Our allegiance.
And
our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
The overthrow of this kind of power. I mean, did you get that? I mean, he declared war on the corporate powers of his day. And here's how he wraps it up. It's just a brilliant speech.
In vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution.
As they do today. Well, here we are again.
But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for.
And once again, we find, Ashcroft.
Now, as always, for over a century and a half, the flag, the Constitution, stand against a dictatorship by mob rule and the overprivileged alike.
Say, you get that?
And the flag and the Constitution stand for democracy, not tyranny, for freedom, not subjection.
And freedom suggests freedom from a constraining force, and what might that constraining force be? Extreme. Well, understand, this is not a rant against people getting rich. I have no problem with people getting rich. And what I'm suggesting is that there is a function for government that function of government is quite specific, and that the economy actually comes out of government. The ability to function in a contractual way is something that the government grants. The government regulates our money supply, provides businesses with a money supply that is stable, that it can use, a banking system that it can use. And the conservatives just don't get it. They think that all this stuff just like came from nowhere, like the Easter Bunny brought it, right? It's the Easter Bunny theory. And corporations, they just like, they don't need all this stuff. It just kind of magically appeared. Terry McAuliffe today commenting on, I'll get to that in a second. I've got a caller here. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Wish FDR would run again.
Yeah. I wish, I wish John Kerry would sound more like him.
Yeah, most definitely. Regarding the lack of job creation here. If you look at the rate at which we seem to be coming to nowadays on job creation, it's going to take over a decade just to recover from the jobs that Bush lost, and take a third of a century to cover all the unemployed people right now.
Yeah, nobody's using the words, but we are in the middle of the second Great Depression right now.
Yes, and what's bizarre is you listen to people like Domenici and people like that. They say, well, we were in a bad position before in 92. But, no one anticipated what was going to happen to the economy. They said, biotechnology or nanotechnology may create all these great new jobs.
No one anticipated a Democrat might come along and say, hey, let's have a rational economic policy. Jeff, thanks for the call. I'm sorry, the music there, we're up against the break. I appreciate your call.
And well said. Always well spoken. This is Tom Hartman. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more integrity and passion in broadcasting truth.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
Republicans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by...
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. And a couple of questions in our folks in our chat room. You can get to our chat room by going to tomhartman.com. You can also get to a message board we've got. They're two separate entities. The chat room is in a forum on CompuServe. It'll take you to that forum, and you just click the chat button, and you drop in there, and you can have live conversation with people while we're on the air. And the message board is where you can post messages. And there's, 20,000 or 30,000 messages posted there. And anyhow, a couple of folks in the chat room raised a few interesting questions here during that last piece. First of all, yes, that was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president of the United States during the Great Depression, during World War II. One of the, in my opinion, one of the greatest presidents of the United States, right up there with Thomas Jefferson. And the kind of potential I think Jack Kennedy had. And I wish we had again. And maybe we do. Maybe John Kerry will rise to the occasion. We'll see. The other question that was asked was, what about the commons? See, this is the other thing that the cons love to ignore. And that is the fact that there are all these things that we share in common. They used to be called the commons. I mean, it's still called the commons. But back in the 1700s, everybody knew what the commons was. For example, in Boston, there's a park in the center of town called the Boston Common. Why was it called a common? Because it was the area where everybody could graze their animals. It was the area that nobody owned because everybody. That's our air, that's our water, that's our food supply. One of the questions in the chat room was, is our food supply part of the common? Yes, that's why we have the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's why we check our food supply. We decided collectively some 50, 60 years ago that our food supply was part of our commons and that we were going to make sure that it was safe and available to people. I think medicine should be part of the commons. It is in every other country in the world, every other industrialized, every other country, anywhere close to being as wealthy as we are, and a lot of them a lot poorer than us. Did you see on the news the other night where we're building an Iraqi healthcare system where every Iraqi is covered? Every Iraqi has full healthcare, but not Americans. Oh, anyhow, this is Tom Hartman. 2 minutes before the hour.
It's coming through a hole.
You're in the real free speech zone.
From those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day. From the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed, thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. When George W. Bush headed west on Wednesday to raise millions of dollars for his election, his campaign enjoyed one of the greatest recent bargains in American politics, all-day use of Air Force One for the price of a few first-class airfares. Although the trip had an explicitly political purpose, taxpayers will pick up most of the expenses. The Republican National Committee estimates the cost of flying Air Force One at $35,000 or more per hour, but federal rules require the Bush-Cheney campaign to reimburse the government only for the cost of a first-class plane ticket for Bush and a handful of political aides who accompany him. The Federal Election Commission yesterday set in motion regulatory proceedings that could severely restrict new pro-democratic groups seeking to defeat George W. Bush. The proposed regulations would severely crimp the fundraising and spending activities of 527 groups named for the section of the tax code that governs their activities. But advocates of the tough regulations suffered a setback when a Democratic commissioner in a position to cast the key swing vote said she is likely to oppose any changes in the rules that would take effect before the November elections. The Republican National Committee is pressing the six-member commission to rule that a network of pro-democratic organizations with a plan to spend as much as $300 million this year, most of it soft money, is breaking the law. The federal grand jury probing the leak of a covert CIA officer's identity has subpoenaed records of Air Force One telephone calls in the week before the officer's name was published in a column in July. Contained in three grand jury subpoenas are requests to the Executive Office of George W. Bush for records created in July by the White House Iraq Group, a little-known internal task force established in August 2002 to create a strategy to publicize the threat posed by Saddam Hussein. Also, the subpoenas asked for a transcript of White House spokesman Ari Fleischer's July 12th press briefing in Nigeria, missing from the official White House website, but recently discovered in a scoop by the pro-democracy site TakeBackTheMedia.com. More after this.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
The Church of England is seeking a virtual vicar for its first internet parish. The Diocese of Oxford is advertising for a web pastor to lead a virtual congregation when it rolls out its new online church at www.ichurch.org. Offering daily online worship, a daily reading, and prayers, the church is intended to appeal to folks who desire to be part of a congregation but cannot or are unwilling to join a traditional parish. For a Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
To the barricades, people! Here come the money grubbers, trying to get their hands on one of the few small freedoms that is still essentially free in our world. Sending email. None other than Bill Gates, the emperor of Microsoft's virtual kingdom, has acknowledged that his monopolistic corporation, the largest email provider in the world, is trying to develop an email stamp. Apparently, he's trying to be the global post office of the internet. Microsoft is conspiring with Yahoo, Inc., the second largest email provider, to work out the technological kinks to make it possible for them to create a virtual stamp. Actually, an encrypted code number, so they can assess a fee for each email, probably starting modestly with a penny per message. Excuse me? Bill Gates is the richest human on the planet, with more personal wealth than some nations, yet he feels the need to collect a penny from each of our emails? No, no, say the minions of Microsoft and Yahoo. This is something we want to do to help you. It's for your own good. They're cloaking this sneaky stamp tax with a claim that they're just wanting to stop those dastardly spammers who fill our email boxes with electronic junk mail, hogging all sorts of products and services. Quote, there is not enough friction in sending email, says a Yahoo operative, and the plan is to apply friction at a penny a pop. Of course, while couching this as a noble public service, the corporations would be creating an endless new revenue stream running right into their pockets. This is Jim Hightower saying, company executives say that you and I shouldn't fear this e-stamp because initially they had only required the big bulk users of email to pay this corporate assessment of postage, not us. Pardon my skepticism, but Microsoft and Yahoo are not altruistic entities. And their long records of profiteering suggest that once they get the technology in place, they'll milk us consumers for all they can get.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman with you. It's the second hour of our Friday program, and just always a pleasure. I look forward to this segment of the program. It's always a pleasure to have Congressman Bernie Sanders on in the second hour on a Friday. So I think of Bernie Sanders, he's my congressman here in Vermont, but I think of him as America's congressman because he's the only independent in the United States House of Representatives. He became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years in 1991. He has since been reelected five times, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, it is good to be with you again, and you keep up the great work that you are doing and taking on right-wing media.
Thank you. We're doing our best here. I got this news story from Reuters, Bernie. About 50 U.S. House members plan to introduce a bill Wednesday. This was earlier in the week. And it turns out you wrote this bill, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about it.
Very important bill. I know, Tom, you and I and listeners have been very, very concerned about the collapse of manufacturing in this country, the fact that we've lost almost 3 million good-paying manufacturing jobs in the last 3 years. People are growing increasingly worried about outsourcing of high-tech information technology jobs. And these are jobs that pay people really good wages, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. And what we're seeing now is corporations taking those jobs to India and other countries. And that is just leading to what I think is a significant decline in the middle class in America. So some of us in Congress, and I'm happy to tell you we have 53 co-sponsors on this bill, are beginning the process of standing up to corporate America and saying, hey, wait a second, you've got to start reinvesting in the United States of America, strange as that idea may seem, and start creating decent-paying jobs here. And one of the approaches, there are a lot of different approaches out there, but one of the approaches is that right now, many of the listeners may not know it, but we are spending tens of billions of dollars of their tax dollars in providing corporate welfare that goes to some of the very largest corporations in America. In fact, you name the corporation, they're probably getting it. And, Tom, you know what some of these guys are doing with this money? They're saying, thank you, American taxpayers, for money from the XM Bank. Thank you for money from the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. We appreciate all your corporate welfare. We're off to China. We're off to Mexico. We're off to India. So our legislation is very simple, and it says for the first time, corporate America, if you want public welfare money, if you want the kinds of subsidies that you've gotten for years, you're going to have to tell us how many workers you have in America, how many workers you have abroad. And if you are laying off workers in this country and moving abroad, guess what? You are not going to get any more taxpayer money. Let me just give you, if I might, just a few examples.
Sure.
Just a few.
Go for it.
Motorola. Motorola, since 2001, has laid off almost 43,000 American workers.
And how much welfare did they get?
And they received $190 million in corporate welfare.
And it was actually tied to that, wasn't it? I mean, this is from the Export-Import Bank, so they received $190 million to help them lay off 42,000.
Yes, they would argue not. But the bottom line is you can go into the Export-Import Bank and you say, well, I've got one project here that's going to help us with 300 jobs. And they say, oh, that's really good. But we're not going to talk about the 42,000 other jobs that you have lost in the United States and sent abroad.
Right.
So it's a very absurd corporate approach toward these programs, which say to these companies, essentially, you can do anything you want. The head of General Electric, this guy named Jeffrey Immelt, has gotten up there, and he said, in so many words, we are moving to China. And you know what the government in the United States says? Here's some more corporate welfare. Thank you all for all you're doing.
Yeah. Why? You know, now you said that in this bill you're going to – by the way, let me tell our listeners, if you'd like to call in and be on the line here with Bernie, I know he welcomes your calls.
His
number, the number here is 1-866-889-8894, 1-866-889-8894. And somebody had asked about the previous segment. The Arizona Republic was the newspaper that clip had come out of. This is Bernie, let me be off topic here for just a second. We had somebody call. And you can find their website online very easily. Just plug Arizona Republic into Google and you'll get it. Bernie, you said that with this bill, we're going to say to these companies, if you want our corporate welfare money, you at least have to have jobs in America.
Right.
Why have corporate welfare money at all?
Well, that's a good question. You can argue, you can absolutely argue that we should end it, and some people do. On the other hand, you could make a case that if you have a company that needs some financial assistance who is very clear about wanting to create decent-paying jobs in America, then it is a good thing for taxpayers to do.
Ultimately, when you do the math, and but you'd have to apply that. I mean, as an administration policy or as a governmental policy, you'd have to apply that to human beings as well. I mean, you say, you know, having health care for people.
Absolutely, that goes without saying, Tom.
Yeah, okay.
But the bottom line is, what has happened over the years is this corporate welfare stuff has run absolutely crazy stuff now.
Yeah.
And they're just throwing money at these large corporations who are then running abroad and costing us large numbers of people.
So the welfare mothers in the limousines now are the, I forget her name, in the Walton family. These are the new welfare queens, I think was the phrase that Reagan used and back then.
That's right.
These are the corporations.
Well, here's the irony. If you're an unemployed worker today and you go down and you've lost your job, you got to fill out all these forms to tell the government that you're entitled to unemployment compensation, right?
Right.
You're a large corporation. You're laying off American workers. You get a lot. You get, hundreds of millions of dollars. That is obviously stupid. And this is one approach. I mean, there are clearly other things that we've got to do. But the taxpayers of this country should not be providing money to corporations who are throwing our workers out on the street.
Yeah, I'm with you there. 13 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Tom in California has called 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. Pleased to hear you on there. And I'm going to assume then that Congressman Sanders is very much against this free trade area of the Americas that President Bush is trying to push through right now. It's a huge expansion of NAFTA.
Tom, Bernie Sanders is one of the leaders in Congress against virtually all of these trade agreements, and we've introduced legislation which would repeal permanent normal trade relations with China, and I'm also supporting legislation that would repeal NAFTA.
Okay, so this free trade area of the Americas, Bush is pushing on this really hard.
Yes.
Are you've written a bill specifically against that?
Well, I am in opposition to it. and I'm on board legislation that would repeal NAFTA. Clearly, our current trade policies are a failure. So why in God's name would anybody want to expand them?
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's not free trade at all, but it's managed trade.
That's right.
And
yeah.
It's just not working for America.
Yeah. Well said, Tom. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. We're on the air with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Coach Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
It's great to hear you again. And I love Fridays with Lunch with Bernie. You know, I was watching, I think it was on Lou Dobbs, who always runs these Exporting America series. But some, either a lobbyist or some guy working for a corporation, was justifying the exportation of jobs by saying it's all about the dividends. And if they can cut 30 or 40% of their labor costs, it's for the good of the corporation, and that's their responsibility and their duty, which to me says government needs to step in this case, to stop the sort of natural tendencies of corporations to exploit people for the bottom line, no matter what.
Well, Glenn, you're making two points. First of all, Lou Dobbs, who I should tell you is a conservative.
Right.
He is doing an excellent job. He's doing better than anybody on the corporate television side in every single day exposing what corporations are doing to the American worker. And I really applaud what he's doing. I was just on a show the other day. And he's banging away at this issue very, very successfully. Second point that you make is that for many of these corporations, and we should be clear about it, they are very overt in now telling us they could care less about American workers, the middle class of this country, or in fact the United States of America. All they care about is the bottom line for their corporation. And if they are going to lay off tens of thousands of American workers, go to China, hire people at 20 or 30 cents an hour, and they can make more money, that's fine. That's the bottom line.
But
all they're concerned about.
But and Glenn, thanks for that call and those comments. But the bottom line, Bernie, is that the Supreme Court ruled some years ago that if an officer of a corporation fails to enhance the bottom line, that they've actually committed a crime, a failure of fiduciary responsibility.
Yep, right.
And the IRS has ruled that if you do things that don't have a direct positive impact on the bottom line, very often you can't deduct them. For example, you can make a deduction for charitable contributions, a corporation can, if you can prove that that contribution is going to get you enough publicity that the PR would be worth the cost of the contribution.
Isn't that an incredible thought?
Yeah, but I mean, so we've got this reality that those are kind of the rules of the game that we've set up here, and it just seems rational to me. I really appreciate your approach. It just seems rational to say, hey, you know, business is a game. You can play the game. We have nothing against people making money. All in favor, in fact. But let's play the game in a way that ultimately benefits society, because the game is being played in society. It's being sanctioned by society. It's being actually facilitated by society, by government, and by the people.
What you're saying, which is really quite incredible and true, is that corporations are penalized if they do the right thing and
That's
try
right.
to have a conscience which helps people in our country.
That's right. Yeah, and I've been on the receiving end of that. I mean, I've run businesses where we wanted to do things in the community, and my CPA would say, well, you know, if you do that, you're going to have to pay for it out of your own pocket. You know. So anyway, we got a couple other calls here. Richard in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman.
Hi.
I'd like to say it's an honor to speak to both of you. I really look forward to hearing every Friday morning with the Congressman. I'd like to ask one question, all right, and this is a little bit off topic, but why aren't we hearing from the Democrats, any of them, anything about the 9/11 Commission? Why haven't we heard about the failure of the first Bush administration and their intelligence failures when they tried to knock down the towers the first time? And I'd also like to hear from the listeners, So I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
Okay,
thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
Well, Richard, sometimes you don't hear from folks, not because they're not speaking out on the issue, but sometimes the media doesn't carry that. I remember, for example, during the lead-up to the war in Iraq, I personally was involved in 6 or 7 national press conferences, including one I remember with people whose family members were killed on 9/11, which, you know, got almost no coverage at all. So people do talk about issues more than sometimes the average American knows. They're just sometimes not carried. In terms of the investigation, obviously, we want, I'm an independent, not a Democrat, but I think many Democrats and some Republicans will join me in wanting an independent and thorough investigation to find out what the Bush administration knew, what kind of information they had received before 9/11 and what they did in response to that.
Yeah, well said, well said. It's Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us the second hour of our Friday program. This is Tom Hartman. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
International Ice Patrol tracks icebergs in the North Atlantic Ocean, and this year marks its 90th season at sea. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The International Ice Patrol keeps tabs on icebergs that drift from the Arctic Circle into shipping lanes across the North Atlantic, and its season is now in high gear. The iceberg season runs from February to July, and the patrol sometimes has to monitor hundreds of icebergs during that time. Donald Murphy is an oceanographer with the Ice Patrol, and he says it has an illustrious history. It was founded in 1914, 2 years after the Titanic collided with an iceberg and sank. Murphy says in the early days, the patrol had just two ships and a very big job.
It's amazing to think of what the operation was at the time, is there were two ships, and they took turns, and they would find the southernmost iceberg in the shipping lanes, and they would stay by that iceberg for days and days and days, broadcasting the position of that iceberg to the passing vessels.
Murphy says each ship spent a few weeks at sea before being relieved. Together, the two ships monitored icebergs continuously from March all the way into July.
It always has struck me that that was a difficult way to make a living, because they were out there and sometimes in very heavy seas and storms and unbelievable fog doing their jobs. I have to say that I'm glad that we don't do it that way anymore.
These days, the Ice Patrol is more high-tech. It uses airplanes, radar, and computer models to spot icebergs and predict where they're likely to go. The International Ice Patrol is a division of the U.S. Coast Guard and has funding from 17 countries. Murphy says it has a perfect record for guiding ships around the icebergs of the North Atlantic. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the retirement age to 67 years old.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving. How can they know it's time for them to go?
And it's time for the cons to go. It's time defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's Brunch with Bernie, our Friday afternoon segment, second hour of our Friday program. And our number is 1-866-889-8894. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's only independent congressman. I think of him as America's congressman. And Kim in Grand Rapids is on the line with us. Kim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm nervous. I'd be the first in line to go against these companies that are going out. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. They also should look at or talk more about these foreign companies coming in and taking over our big corporations and dissembling them. There's a large one in Grand Rapids that I'd give everything I own to know if they're going to stay here. They've come in and they're German owned, and they're just the company's going great, and they're dissembling everything they can and trying to make it run it right down to the ground.
Hmm. And in order to enhance the bottom line, Bernie, what about that? Trade slices both ways, and we've got foreign companies setting up in the United States and now, from what Kim is saying, playing the same kind of games with jobs that we're playing in China.
I mean, it's when you stop and you think about it, let's take a deep breath and take an overall look at what's happening. Here we are living in a world, Tom, you know this very, very well, where we've seen an explosion of technology and worker productivity. Is that correct?
Sure.
That's the good news. And what that should mean is that ordinary people today should be working fewer hours and earning higher wages. Mm-hmm. And yet the exact opposite is taking place. And it's like the United States government, our Congress, and our president are living in another world while the middle class is being decimated, and while corporations are consistently pounding away at the middle class in a dozen different ways. In this case, Kim is indicating another company is coming in, dismembering it, from what I understand, dismembering, tearing apart a company that is working well, is profitable, and is providing jobs in order to increase their bottom line.
So what do we do about that, Bob?
Well, you do a number of things about it. First of all, the United States Congress and the President of the United States, radical concept though it may be, has got to declare itself on the side of the American worker. And there are a number of things that we can do.
Oh, but Bernie, that wouldn't be conservative.
That's right. I mean, this gets you to campaign finance reform and all of that stuff. And once you accept that proposition, then ideas become, you know, fairly logical. We change our trade policy so that we don't encourage companies to go abroad and be able to bring back their products in this country tariff-free, resulting in the destruction of massive amounts of industry in this country. Number two, instead of giving welfare to General Electric and Motorola and other companies that are downsizing, you know what you do? You work with employees to help them own the companies in which they are now working. I know that sounds like a radical idea, but it makes a lot more sense to me to provide financial assistance, long-term loans, grants to companies where workers are coming together and say, you know what? We're not going to go to China. We're not going to go to Mexico. We want to stay in this community, but we need some help to start up. I think you do that. I think you raise the minimum wage to a living wage. I think we join the rest of the industrialized world and develop a national health care program. But the bottom line, getting back to the point we were making a few minutes ago, Tom, is we cannot allow our society to be run only on the basis of what is good for the bottom line for large multinational corporations. Because time and time again, that works to the disservice of the American people, and especially to our working people.
Yeah, that's very well said. Kim, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to us there on
WTKG. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Well, we got about 5 seconds.
us work more hours.
Mm-hmm.
The salary employees, they just made them, upped them. They have to work a minimum of 50, and they don't get any extra time unless they work 60 or more.
Yeah,
That's unbelievable.
This is horrific. Kim, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bernie, stick around. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. We shall return.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
3 years ago, the Bush administration directed federal agencies to review government jobs and identify those that could be privatized. But a new study from the General Accounting Office finds most agencies have spent the time parsing the rules of the policy rather than actually cutting jobs. The GAO says inadequate funding to conduct the privatization plan, as well as frequent changes to its guidelines, have hampered the effort. Yet the study examined seven agencies, which contain more than 80% of all federal jobs. Of the 17,000 jobs considered for contracting, in more than three-quarters of the cases, it found government employees were more efficient and cost-effective than contractors.
Public transport in Minneapolis-St. Paul ground to a halt yesterday as 2,200 drivers, mechanics, bus cleaners, and clerical workers with the Twin Cities Metro Transit walked out on strike. Local 1005 of the Amalgamated Transit Union has gone since August without a new contract, and after managers with Metro Transit refused to either submit to binding arbitration or to accept a contract extension, members struck. Michelle Summers is vice president of the local.
Unfortunately, their attitude all along has been take it or leave it. They have threatened to impose, and the members just have not accepted that. We have said we want a fair deal, and we're going to be out as long as it takes to get that.
Like so many other labor disputes these days, the Twin Cities transit strike involves issues of health care. Metro Transit managers want to roll back the number of workers who qualify for retiree health coverage, and they want employees to shoulder more of the cost of the coverage.
As the hype builds for this year's Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece, labor rights advocates are using the occasion to increase pressure on sweatshop practices around the globe. The British NGO Oxfam just released a comprehensive report into the production practices of major athletic clothing companies like Adidas, Nike, Puma, Reebok, and Umbro. It found all run sweatshops. Conditions in Bulgaria, Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Turkey, and Thailand were singled out for special criticism, where it's commonplace for garment workers to spend as long as 18 hours a day at work and are paid well under what's considered a local living wage. Oxfam says if the Olympics is truly serious about showcasing the best of human achievement, it should not allow athletes to perform in clothing whose manufacture results in human exploitation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry.
Oh, I think that's Patsy Cline again with that song for George W. Is he going to make it through the next election cycle?
Sleep won't come.
No, I don't think so. We'll see. One can hope. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 27 minutes before the hour. It's second hour of our Friday afternoon program, Brunch with Congressman Bernie Sanders. And Raymond in Bend, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Raymond, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live with me and Bernie.
Good morning, gentlemen.
It's a pleasure
to be on the airways with you here. I have just a quick follow-up to the caller who was on in the last segment with regards to 9/11.
Yep.
And for those who have internet access, just go to Google and take a look for something called 911 International Inquiry. And at the end of the month in San Francisco, there's going to be a presentation, a three-day presentation on independent investigations into 911, and it looks like it's going to be a good program. Probably one of those things, as you've talked about, that the media won't cover, but at least, you know, there are people who are independently looking into this tragedy and the cover-up that we're faced with right now.
Yeah, okay, great. Raymond, thanks for the information. Was there a question in there?
A question for Congressman Sanders would be, I was fascinated by the information that he had on OPIC and the corporate welfare, and I'm wondering if information along those lines is available on his website.
Absolutely.
Or other okay. Sources.
And Raymond, thank you very much for reminding me. That's we have a very good website which deals with a lot of the issues that many of the listeners are concerned with. It's www.bernie.house.gov.
Bernie.house.gov.
A whole lot of visitors to that website. It's one of the best things Congress, I think, the listeners would enjoy. And we certainly have a lot of information on corporate welfare and outsourcing and our disastrous trade policies.
Great. I'm going to have to put a link to that from TomHartman.com.
That would be great.
And feature our regular Friday segments here. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. Bernie, if the calls slow down or perhaps in some future show, I love that idea of that you suggested, and I'd like to drill a little deeper into it, but we got two calls on hold, but of the idea of taking that kind of corporate welfare money that we are giving corporations right now and that they're using to offshore jobs, and instead giving that to employees, to workers, to buy stock in the companies.
Absolutely.
For which they work. I mean, that I think that's absolutely brilliant.
All right, let's talk about it in the future.
Okay, yeah, or we'll see. We got a couple calls here. Let's
okay.
see. That was the last one was Raymond in Oregon, wasn't it? So
yeah.
We got, okay, this is Roy in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, folks. I love this time on Friday morning. Bernie, I'd like to make a couple quick comments, a little background, then throw a couple questions out, and then I'll get off.
Sure.
I am amazed at how, for want of a better word, ignorant people are about their, quote, tax refunds and how they benefited from this big tax cut. If they get a tax refund, that just means that they didn't withhold properly. And I was thinking specifically about the good call from Phoenix in the last hour. Secondly, Tom, you were mentioning the Easter Bunny. I read some article somewhere about the Santa Claus effect, where the Repubs are going to give everything away just like Santa Claus, and then the Dems have to come back in, clean up their mess, and it's like the parent that told the kid, there ain't no Santa Claus.
Yeah, this was the strategy that the Reagan advisors actually, it was outed that they called it the Santa Claus strategy.
Right.
Yeah.
The two quick questions I'll ask, and then I'll get off and let you guys discuss it. Number one, I am so concerned about the Haiti-Argentina link and what we're doing.
You mean Venezuela.
Overthrow democratically elected governments.
Yeah.
And secondly, this toxic House leader called Tom DeLay, I think he sniffed too much of his chemicals, and he's ethically challenged, and I wondered where that's going. I saw something out of the corner of my eye the other day on C-SPAN about them challenging him.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys talk about that. Look forward to next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Roy.
Roy raised a lot of issues.
Yeah, he did.
Briefly touch on them. What I think people are increasingly catching on to is the way the Bush administration does business. For example, certainly one of the issues that the president will be promoting for his reelection effort is, look, I gave you a tax break, And, you know, look at all of the good things that these tax breaks will do, and I'm sure it'll be up there with some family who has gotten a tax break, and they'll be thanking the president, and that'll be a 30-second ad. What people should know is that the vast majority of these tax breaks went not to working people. The president will not be doing a 30-second commercial with some of the richest people in this country who receive millions of dollars in tax breaks from his proposal. That's what he will not be talking about. But we should understand that the bulk of these tax breaks went precisely to people who don't need it. And then Roy raised a very interesting question. And I want people to think about this. We have a conservative president. Why is a conservative president driving up the deficit over $500 billion this year? The national debt is now over $7 trillion. Why is that? And the answer, I think, and Roy touched on this, is that this country is going to be so deeply in debt that they hope that no matter who comes along as president, what will happen is the privatization of Medicare, of Social Security, the Veterans Administration, massive cutbacks at all kinds of federal programs that help the middle class and working people of this country. Because why? The deficit is so high. The national debt is so high. So I think that there is an ulterior motive for what Bush is doing in addition to helping his wealthy friends, and that is to making it impossible for government to serve the people. So I think Roy makes a very good point.
Yeah, and I would add to that that the upside for their corporate paymasters is that if you wipe out the middle class, you get rid of those pesky labor unions. You have terrified workers who will work for anything they want. And it's a Dickensian world. But even during Dickens' times, there were people who were doing very well and kind of liked it that way, and they had the power and control. And that's really the agenda here.
I think you're quite right.
It's neo feudalism, in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, and Jane in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I had two things I was thinking about. One was I'm listening to Bernie Sanders talk about the corporate structure, and I remember when my father had a small grocery store in a mining town, and when the people went on strike, he felt sorry and gave them food and put them on credit. And then when they went back, they had to go to the company store and buy their food, so they didn't have any money to go ahead and pay my father. So he went out of business, and that was a small business. But what I called about was to find out, you know, President Bush has been running all around the country making speeches on Air Force One, and they're all campaign speeches. And I wonder if he's paying back the people paying back the people out of that $104 million. For the use of Air Force One for campaign speeches.
Well, what the law requires, Jane, is that if the purpose is a campaign purpose, that his campaign should pay for it. Sometimes where you run into gray areas is what happens if he's in a town doing, quote-unquote, an official presidential program at the same time as he is raising money or giving a campaign speech. But theoretically and technically, at least, his campaign fund is supposed to pay when he's on a campaign.
But he always ties these two together. I mean, there was a story in the paper on Martin Luther King Day about how his staff had actually contacted the King family and said that the president would like to come and lay a wreath, and would they? And this was a fairly last minute thing,
right.
And would they go along with that? And they, of course, I mean, who's going to say no to the president of the United States? And they did. And then they later discovered that he had 6 months in advance scheduled a fundraiser near Atlanta for that particular day where he walked away with over $1 million that night, and what he needed was an excuse to have you and I pay for the cost of Air Force One.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So the theory is that when you're on a campaign visit, the campaign pays for it, not the taxpayers. But clearly, you can mix those things together and have the taxpayer pick up the bill.
Clearly this is being abused.
Yep.
1-866-889-8894 is our number. And Jim in driving through Alabama is on the line. Hey, Jim.
Yes, Tom. How are you?
Great. Boy, you're loud there.
I have a question. How long is it that a member of Senate or member of Congress has to stay in Senate or Congress? And then, in other words, and then get out of those positions and still retain their full retirement from the U.S. government. How long of a period is that?
Well, there's a retirement system, by the way, which was changed substantially before I became a member of Congress. And right now, the way it works, it's a kind of a conventional thing. You don't get your full payment. Based on how long you are there, you get a retirement pension.
Yeah. Now, Jim, is what you're referring to this wacky email that's going around that says that Robert Byrd is going to retire with $7 million in benefits?
Sure. I saw that. Somebody in my constituency gave me that.
I understand that members of Senate and Congress get like $100,000 a year, even though they're...
No.
Okay.
No, you don't.
Well,
how much is your retirement, Bernie?
If you're elected, I don't remember what it is, but if you're elected and you serve 2 years, the amount of retirement benefit you're going to get is very negligible. If you're there, like Byrd, for a very, very long time, it becomes more. But it's based on the amount of time you serve in your salary. So I saw that email, and that's grossly inadequate. It's also, I think, in that email indicated that members of Congress don't pay Social Security taxes, which is also untrue. Now, what's confusing...
Well, my point is that you have people out here working for 40, 45, 50 years for Social Security, and they just don't make enough money to... Mm-hmm. to set up their own retirement plan, so they are fully dependent upon Social Security.
Right.
Yet, Senate and Congress has the audacity to cut benefits for these people. I think, if anything, they should be raising these benefits.
Absolutely right.
And let me you speak to that.
Well, you're right. There's no question about it. Jim may have heard
Thank you, Jim.
Alan Greenspan recently getting up there and saying, well, apropos of what we were just talking about a moment ago, Tom.
Yeah.
The deficit is very large. The national debt is very large. And I, Alan Greenspan, think we should cut back.
Yeah, let's cut Social Security.
Social Security and Medicare.
Surprise, surprise.
That is absolutely outrageous. Of course we should not. But that gets to national priorities of whether you give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%, drive up the national debt, and then you tell seniors, oh, we're going to have to extend your retirement age and cut back on your COLAs. That's obviously absurd.
So what do you think the chances are, Bernie, that Congress will ever get around to passing any kind of law that says basically whatever the benefits that the United States Congress gets, that's how the Social Security system is defined?
It probably won't happen tomorrow, Tom.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong, in my opinion, with congressmen or congresswomen, members of Congress getting a pension. I think instead of, the attacks from the right have basically been saying, members of Congress shouldn't get this, how dare they, blah, blah, blah. Instead, we should be saying, hey, shouldn't all Americans get pensions? Shouldn't Social Security be appropriately funded?
And by the way, as you may know, this whole issue of pensions is an issue I have been working very, very hard on, starting with IBM workers in the state of Vermont and nationally.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is a huge attack on the pensions that workers have been promised. We're seeing an attack on the retiree benefits that people had been promised by corporate America. So, yeah, I think the average American should be treated in the same way as members of Congress are. And that's the fight that we've got to wage.
There you go. And let's bring people up rather than trying to squash the members of Congress down.
Yeah, and there are a lot of lies about. I saw that email. Just a lot of inaccuracies in it.
Oh yeah, I mean it was just incredible. It was and it was so vituperative. It was so vicious. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. It's 13 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman, and Wendy in Milwaukee's on the line. Hey, Wendy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Representative Sanders, you're doing a wonderful job. I have a question about this Hewitt report that just came out by Hewitt Associates. Are you familiar with that?
The Helix report? Tell me a little bit about it.
They're finding that a lot of corporations are finding hidden costs with their outsourcing, and it's not as great a panacea as they thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that all of a sudden these corporations are going to come back to us and say, hey, we're doing you a great favor. We're going to bring the jobs back to the U.S., but you have to pay to help us do it, when, in fact, it's not working out for some of these corporations.
Yeah. Your thoughts on that, Bernie? Thanks, Wendy.
Well, I think some companies, for example, China is not an easy place to do business, and there's a lot of corruption that goes on, and you need, in some cases, Chinese partners, and some companies are finding it difficult to do it. But I would have to say, I would have to tell Wendy that I think so long as countries like China have wage scales that are so much lower than the United States. Or in India, you can get really skilled accountants and professional people at a fraction of the salaries that in the United States. The trend is going to continue to be outsourcing unless we change our national policies, which is what we've got to do. And you know, that's what we're working on.
Yeah, okay. 1-866-889-8894. We just have a minute and a half or so left in this segment. Bernie, if you can stick around after the break, too, because we've got a couple of other calls here.
Sure.
But Greg and San Rafael is on. Greg, a quickie?
Yeah, Bernie, this is Greg Dinger from VerifiedVoting.org. We
got
great news earlier this week that we've now got 125 co-sponsors for H.R. 2239, which is the bill that would deliver us a voter-verified paper ballot for the paperless touchscreen machines in November.
Yeah. That's very important issue.
That's
and
great news. Greg, I got
I'm
sorry we were up against a break, Greg, but thanks for letting us know about that. Bernie, stick around. We'll take one more call here before we end up, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Great. Okay. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is E-C-O-W-I-N-E.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but Bush now says he came from Texas to Washington. And he wants to fight with many, and he says it's not for oil. He sent out the National Guard.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's Friday afternoon, brunch with Bernie Sanders. Just two quick things. Greg from Verified Voting, Bernie, wanted us to be sure to make the point that this Rush Holtz bill, this H.R. 22, do you know the number off the top of your head? I don't. I don't remember it. But everybody knows that it's the Verified Voting bill. Needs more sponsors. And so please contact your member of Congress. The telephone number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121. Call and ask you, tell your member of Congress. And that said, let's go to Florence in Grand Rapids, who is on the line and has a question or comment. Hey, Florence, welcome to the program.
Hi. Just want to say hi to you and to Bernie Sanders, because I've watched him for years. I've been a liberal for 57 years and proud of it.
God bless you.
And I really want an answer to this question. How do I find out how much money goes to corporate welfare, and are the companies listed so that people like myself can see how much money is given to these corporations?
Well, Florence, for a start, go to my website, bernie.house.gov, and you can get some information there, and we can then lead you to different agencies that provide this corporate welfare, like the Export-Import Bank, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, the Generation for New Cars, and so forth and so on. So a number of different agencies in government expend that money. But start off at our website, and I think you'll find it very useful.
Is there any way that this information can be gotten out to the general public? Because I think they would be absolutely astounded.
Well, that's what Tom and I are trying to do today.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, isn't Bernie? Thanks, Florence, for that call. I appreciate it. Bernie, isn't one of the Nader groups out there spreading the word?
Sure. I mean, Public Citizen doing a really good job.
Right.
A number of good groups, and you know what else? You have some conservative groups.
Sure.
You have groups like the Cato Institute who say, "Hey, we don't think the government should be spending any money in this area at all."
Yeah, and well said. I mean, if we're going to have corporate welfare, well, yeah, it's a beyond the discussion. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, Tom, and you keep up that great job.
I'll do it. Okay.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye now. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Best of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery for change. And it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to
WSB.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Layoffs usually focus on those who go unemployed, but those left behind also pay a price in their health. Analysis of the Finnish workforce by researchers at the University of Helsinki, published in the British Medical Journal, found that when a company downsized staff by 18% or more, it sparked a significant rise in the number of sick days taken by surviving employees. The main culprit? Stress from a heightened workload and the loss of workplace colleagues.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. When George W. Bush headed west on Wednesday to raise millions of dollars for his election, his campaign enjoyed one of the greatest recent bargains in American politics, all-day use of Air Force One for the price of a few first-class airfares. Although the trip had an explicitly political purpose, taxpayers will pick up most of the expenses. The Republican National Committee estimates the cost of flying Air Force One at $35,000 or more per hour, but federal rules require the Bush-Cheney campaign to reimburse the government only for the cost of a first-class plane ticket for Bush and a handful of political aides who accompany him. The Federal Election Commission yesterday set in motion regulatory proceedings that could severely restrict new pro-democratic groups seeking to defeat George W. Bush. The proposed regulations would severely crimp the fundraising and spending activities of 527 groups named for the section of the tax code that governs our activities. But advocates of the tough regulations suffered a setback when a Democratic commissioner in a position to cast the key swing vote said she is likely to oppose any changes in the rules that would take effect before the November elections. The Republican National Committee is pressing the six-member commission to rule that a network of pro-democratic organizations with a plan to spend as much as $300 million this year, most of it soft money, is breaking the law. The federal grand jury probing the leak of a covert CIA officer's identity has subpoenaed records of Air Force One telephone calls in the week before the officer's name was published in a column in July. Contained in three grand jury subpoenas are requests to the executive office of George W. Bush for records created in July by the White House Iraq Group, a little-known internal task force established in August 2002 to create a strategy to publicize the threat posed by Saddam Hussein. Also, the subpoenas ask for a transcript of White House spokesman Ari Fleischer's July 12th press briefing in Nigeria, missing from the official White House website, but recently discovered in a scoop by the pro-democracy site TakeBackTheMedia.com. More after this.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
The Church of England is seeking a virtual vicar for its first internet parish. The Diocese of Oxford is advertising for a web pastor to lead a virtual congregation when it rolls out its new online church at www.ichurch.org. Offering daily online worship, a daily reading, and prayers, the church is intended to appeal to folks who desire to be part of a congregation but cannot or are unwilling to join a traditional parish. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Tricky Dick had nothing on Tricky George. Nixon mostly played his tricks in politics, but Bush is even more dangerous, for he routinely plays his tricks in government. Most famous, of course, is his always-shifting find-the-weapons-of-mass-destruction game, which already has killed more than 500 Americans, wounded 3,000 more, and caused untold numbers of casualties among innocent Iraqis. But he's quite a trickster here at home, too, ranging from his forest of environmental deceptions to his ludicrous claims that job growth will mushroom if only the CEOs and millionaire investors can get more tax breaks. Then there's his budgetary hocus-pocus, where he pretends to pull an elephant out of a hat. Even though he lards his latest budget with more than $500 billion for the military, billions more in special tax giveaways to his wealthy supporters, and a multi-billion-dollar annual prescription drug boondoggle for the drug giants, he claims that his magic budget will cut the ballooning federal deficit in half. It won't, of course, as practically all independent economists agree, but what it does is to give Bush cover for slashing spending on programs that benefit us middle and low-income people. Having frittered away the bulk of the public treasury, Bush suddenly has turned tight-fisted, saying, "We're calling upon Congress to be wise with the taxpayers' money." Among his cuts, school dropout prevention, work training grants, nurse training, rural firefighters, medical research for veterans, lead prevention in children, prison rape prevention, modernizing air controller systems, EPA's Clean Water Fund, modernizing the IRS to pursue corporate tax cheats, small business microloans, CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, state and local law enforcement assistance, college tuition grants, violent crime programs, and after-school care for children. This is Jim Hightower saying Bush's budget is class warfare, enriching the super rich at the expense of the rest of us.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
That's be definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello?
Oh, no. A runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpeting.
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman. And boy, a lot going on today. A lot going on this week. It's Friday afternoon. If you want to call and talk about anything, feel free. 1-866-889-8894. We can kind of clean up the week. One of the folks in our chat room made the comment, coming on the heels of this news report today, that suggested did I give the number? 866-889-8894. One of the folks in our chat room suggested, based on this article, that said that Ralph Nader has 6% of the vote right now, which is enough to swing the election in favor of George Bush. That a vote for Nader is not a vote for Kerry, and nor is it a vote for Bush. And I would respectfully disagree. In Germany, a vote, if we had the German system, a vote for Nader would not be a vote for Kerry or a vote for Bush. If we had the French system, if we had any system if we had the Australian system, any system except the way that the United States is organized and the way Greece is organized, that would be true. But in the United States, we don't have proportional representation. So if you get 6% of the vote, you don't get 6% of the seats in the parliament, and 6% of the say in who gets to be the prime minister or the president. Instead, if you get 6% of the vote, you're on the outside looking in. And if somebody is closely aligned with you, with this political system that we have in the United States, that was a marvelous invention of the founders. I mean, this was the first time it was really tried in a big way. And, yeah, it wasn't perfect. It has been improved on. It was improved on substantially in the 19th century, based largely on writings. The whole concept of proportional representation. But we have this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all system. And because it only allows there to be basically two points of view, as it were. You can have, you know, one side of the argument, the other side of the argument. If a third party comes into that argument and is closely aligned with, say, you've got side A and side B, and the third party comes in, we'll call them side C, but side C is really closely aligned to side A. Now, in every other government in the world except the United States and Greece, A and C together, having more people in favor of them, would end up running the government because they represent the majority opinion, even though there may be differences between how they would approach it. But in the United States, A and C together are going to split the vote, and B, with a minority of votes, is going to win. And Ralph Nader knows this very well. You know, he's written about this. The solution is instant runoff voting or proportional representation, which isn't going to happen. That would require amending the Constitution. But instant runoff voting is the solution. Very straightforward. You vote for your first choice and your second choice. And if the first choice doesn't make some particular threshold, then that vote rolls over into the second choice. So in 2000, if we had instant runoff voting here in Vermont, when I voted for Ralph Nader, if I had made Al Gore my second choice, then when they were calculating the votes, they would say, well, Nader didn't get 15% or whatever the threshold is. So his votes go in, you know, all his votes get thrown out. And the second choice of the individual voters gets determined. And, you know, it's a lot of states are doing this now. I believe the city of San Francisco is doing this. A number of cities, municipalities. This has been one of the big things that the Green Party has been pushing. And to their credit. And frankly, the presidential race is just. And frankly, a lot of the Senate and House races. This is just. This democracy is too vital to put in my opinion, to put into the hands of conservatives any longer. I mean, they have done so much damage, so extraordinarily much damage. Several people have called and asked Louise to pass along to me the question of the website for that audio clip that I played in the first hour of the program. Those of you who've been with us for a couple of hours, it's www.azcentral.com is the website for the Arizona Republic, which is the newspaper. And from that home page, you'd want to track down E.I. Montini's column, E.I.M.O.N.T.I.N.I. He's the author. And his column is titled, it was published on the 4th of March. It was titled Anonymous Voice of America's Unemployed. And that should easily get you there, help you find it. Just weeks after the president predicted the nation would add 300, you remember this, 320,000 jobs that George Bush said we're going to have every month in 2004? And he said this, I mean, last month, that for the, seriously, last month, the president of the United States, in writing, said to the American people that the projections for the balance of 2004 for April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, was that each month 320,000 jobs would be created. He's fallen a little behind that. But he's in fact, these guys are completely divorced from reality. This is the Center for American Progress did a great report on this. I'll just share a couple of their talking points, as it were, with you. A chronological look at the White House's policy response to the job crisis is instructive. First, the administration, let's look at this in the context of time. First, the administration claimed that sending U.S. jobs overseas is a good thing. Remember that? Good thing for the American economy. Yeah, some people may lose jobs, but corporations are going to make more money, and the rich people are going to have more money, and therefore they will spend it here, and therefore there will be a need to make things to give to for them to buy. Make those things here in America, the conservatives say. You'll hear conservatives on the radio telling you this every day, and it is amazing to me that anybody can even still say this with a straight face. But anyhow, so he tried that. Then he tried to distance himself from his own prediction that his policies would create 2.6 million jobs by 2004. Remember, they say, well, you know, yeah, that was just a bureaucratic report with the president's signature on it. Then they considered reclassifying people who work at McDonald's as manufacturing jobs. Flew that trial balloon. Went over as if it was made out of lead. And now, even with tax cuts for the wealthy failing to create the jobs that it promised, the president is touring the country saying a $1 billion plan to make the tax cuts permanent is the only economic prescription that will work. I'm telling you, these guys are hell-bent for leather, determined that they are going to destroy democracy as we have known it in this United States for 227 years. I mean, there's just no other, there is no other way to explain it. I mean, you look clearly, they want to create a dystopian, you know, a Blade Runner society, corporate rule. Then you had the Labor Secretary lying to Congress about the job report. The President's Council of Economic Advisors released a report last month that predicted the 320,000 jobs that I mentioned earlier. This week, Labor Secretary Elaine Chao testified before the House Ways and Means Committee and was asked by Charlie Rangel, congressman from New York, about this projection. She tried to dodge the question. She said, the president didn't sign this report. The Council of Economic Advisors signed this report. In fact, the president signed the report on page 4, notes the Center for American Progress. And then Dick Cheney gets into it. Sort of. I mean, he kind of puts his foot in his mouth, actually. As they note, one top administration official who managed to tell the truth about the administration's economic policies and its effect on jobs was Dick Cheney. He said, quote, if the Democratic policies had been pursued over the last 2 or 3 years, we would not have had the kind of job growth that we've had. End quote. Remember that? It was last week on TV, he said, if we had continued doing what Bill Clinton was doing, you wouldn't see the kind of job growth we've had. Right? With a net 2 million negative job growth record over the last 3 years, Cheney was correctly asserting that the Democrats' policies would have stopped the job loss tide. And now we've got, as the U.S. hemorrhages manufacturing jobs due to an increased reliance on importing and outsourcing, the administration is failing to properly administer existing programs that deal with the problem of worker dislocation. The Department of Trade's, the Department of Labor's Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, the TAA it's called, provides benefits to workers who've lost their jobs because of trade agreements. Sounds nice. Economic Policy Institute, however, reveals that over the past 2 years, the TAA has used less than 60% of the funds it was allocated to help workers. Why? Because of inadequate outreach and program administration by the Department of Labor. Things are so bad there. See, this is the department that is supposed to advance the cause of workers in America. And so, of course, the Bush administration went in with an axe. I mean, it's looking like the cleanup after they make a Freddy Krueger movie there. And things were so bad, a federal court reprimanded the Labor Department for, quote, flaws and dysfunctions in its administration of TAA, end quote, and noted that the Department of Labor's dereliction of duty is depriving workers of the aid they need, end quote. But instead of trying to fix it, you know, what does this administration do? They don't want to fix it. Instead, quote, the president's budget proposes significant cuts to the TAA benefits program. Well, we're not spending the money. We're not, you know, 60% of the money that was allocated for workers to help them retrain never got spent, so therefore we should cut it out of the budget. Well, yeah, we didn't spend it because we laid off the bureaucrats whose job it was to spend it, to get that money to employees. Well, and it continues. And, you know, while the president has touted his commitment to job training, his latest budget proposes cutting funding to states used to retrain workers who have been laid off. Cutting, now this is the first one was federal money to workers who've been laid off as a direct result of outsourcing. This one is money that goes to the states for retraining. The proposed funding level is 11% lower in actual dollars than it was in the 2002 budget. And the actual problem is far worse, though, because there's so many people unemployed. The average dislocated worker program expenditure was $274 in 2001, but it's just $167 today. If you get $167 to be retrained, that's remarkable. It's mind-boggling. 20 minutes past the hour, discussing solutions and not false promises. This is Tom Hartman.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations. Three. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man Dick looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities. hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, some people think that unions are too strong. Union leaders should go back where they belong. But I wish that they could see a little more poverty, and they might start to sing a different song. Well, let's look at old Kentucky for a while. It is hard to find a miner who will smile. Well, the Constitution's fine, but it's hard reading in the mines. And when welfare stops, trouble starts to pile. Well, mining is a hazard in Hazard, Kentucky. And if you ain't mining there, well, my friend, you're awful lucky. Cause if you don't get silicosis or pay, that's just atrocious. You'll be screaming for a union that will care.
Oh, it's such a great song. I'm pretty sure that was Pete Seeger. And just remarkable. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. 25 minutes past the hour. Exposing the con in conservative. I got to tell you about two-tier marketing. I got a clip here from Terry McAuliffe for you. And Dean in Winslow, is that Arizona or Arkansas? I believe Winslow, Arizona. Dean is called 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Dean, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Tom. How are you doing?
Great.
You got a good connection?
I do. Well, actually, I don't.
Oh.
Go for it quick, Dean.
Okay. What I was going to tell you is for everybody, all your listeners out there, the gal called in. You had that little cut from that. Gal talking about losing her job.
Right.
Well, when the first year of Reagan's presidency, I'm a Democrat and a wife. We've worked all our lives. We're middle income. I lost my house the first year. I got a $900 a month cut in pay. The first year of Reagan's presidency. The first year of George Bush Sr.'s presidency. I got laid off, my wife got laid off, and the first year of George Bush Jr.'s presidency, I got laid off and my wife got laid off.
Oh, my.
And I was telling that to some people the other day, and a conservative jumped up and told me, said, well, that was because of Clinton's.
Blame it all.
8 years. Now, wait a minute now.
Blame it all on Clinton.
That's right. And you know what I said to him?
Oh, what? What's that?
I said Reagan was president 8 years before George Bush Sr.
Yeah.
He had nothing to say after I said that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, they try to have it both ways. And, in fact, you'll actually hear conservative talk show hosts, you know, just going on and on and on, trying to slice it both ways. And it's just nonsense. It's just
been up and down for the wife and I. But, you know, we stuck together as a family. We lost a lot of stuff, had to start over again, but we raised two good kids. You know, went on to college. I got a boy in the Navy right now. But against all odds, you know, we managed to survive. You know what I mean?
I do.
And I'll tell you what, though, it was tough on our marriage. We've been married 25 years, and it was rough.
Yeah. Yeah, the unemployment is a very, very difficult thing. Dean, thanks for the call. I appreciate your sharing that with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling in. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And John in Palm Desert's on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Just a quick comment about the Bush tax cuts.
Yes, so-called tax cuts.
Yeah, the way I keep trying to explain it to people is using a credit card analogy. If I have a credit card and they give me money and my debt doesn't increase, then it's a refund. But if they give me money and my debt increases, then it's a cash advance.
Yeah, it's like those checks they mail out.
Yeah, exactly. So I just refer to Bush's tax cut as a cash advance.
Yeah, and it's a cash advance on money that is going not on so much on our account. I mean, we're paying $180 billion a year in interest on the debt that Reagan ran up, mostly. I mean, about 80% of that's Reagan's debt. But we're going to be paying, interest ongoing on this, but the real burden, the real brunt of the burden of these so-called tax breaks is going to fall on our children. It's going to fall on the next generation when these 20-year bonds come due. And it's not going to be pretty unless somebody gets in there quick and cleans it up. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Good point. Well made. Very well said. This is the Tom Hartman Program. 29 minutes after the hour. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. It's what we've got to do, my friends. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
3 years ago, the Bush administration directed federal agencies to review government jobs and identify those that could be privatized. But a new study from the General Accounting Office finds most agencies have spent the time parsing the rules of the policy rather than actually cutting jobs. The GAO says inadequate funding to conduct the privatization plan, as well as frequent changes to its guidelines, have hampered the effort. Yet the study examined seven agencies, which contain more than 80% of all federal jobs. Of the 17,000 jobs considered for contracting, in more than three-quarters of the cases, it found government employees were more efficient and cost-effective than contractors.
Public transport in Minneapolis-St. Paul ground to a halt yesterday as 2,200 drivers, mechanics, bus cleaners, and clerical workers with the Twin Cities Metro Transit walked out on strike. Local 1005 of the Amalgamated Transit Union has gone since August without a new contract, and after managers with Metro Transit refused to either submit to binding arbitration or to accept a contract extension, members struck. Michelle Summers is vice president of the local.
Unfortunately, their attitude all along has been take it or leave it. They have threatened to impose, and the members just have not accepted that. We have said we want a fair deal, and we're going to be out as long as it takes to get that.
Like so many other labor disputes these days, the Twin Cities transit strike involves issues of health care. Metro Transit managers want to roll back the number of workers who qualify for retiree health coverage, and they want employees to shoulder more of the cost of the coverage.
As the hype builds for this year's Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece, labor rights advocates are using the occasion to increase pressure on sweatshop practices around the globe. The British NGO Oxfam just released a comprehensive report into the production practices of major athletic clothing companies like Adidas, Nike, Puma, Reebok, and Umbro. It found all run sweatshops. Conditions in Bulgaria, Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Turkey, and Thailand were singled out for special criticism, where it's commonplace for garment workers to spend as long as 18 hours a day at work and are paid well under what's considered a local living wage. Oxfam says if the Olympics is truly serious about showcasing the best of human achievement, it should not allow athletes to perform in clothing whose manufacture in human exploitation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
One day a mother come to a prison to see an erring but precious son. She told the warden how much she loved him. It did not matter what he had done. She did not bring him pardon. She brought no silver.
What a beautiful guy. Hey, welcome back. This is Tom Hartman. 26 minutes before the hour. And we are back live with you. I got a very quick cut here that I want to share with you from Terry McAuliffe. Actually, though, I see we have a caller here on the line, David in Bakersville, California. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make one comment about the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people recently have been saying, well, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. The real reason was for the oil.
Right.
But the way they say it kind of implies that what we would be doing is getting the oil and benefiting from having the oil. In fact, the result of the war has been to keep the price of oil very high.
How so?
Well, that's the result.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and are you suggesting that there's like a conspiracy theory here or something? Or
conspiracy? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not wise enough to know that. But I suspect that what was happening is that before the war, the legitimacy of imposing the sanctions against Iraq because of the weapons of mass destruction was eroding in the world. People had verified that they were not there. And there was a lot of sentiment in the world that they would allow Iraq to start bringing their oil production back online.
Yeah.
And someone didn't want that.
Well,
they wanted oil to remain high. And in fact, oil price has remained very high.
Let me toss something into the equation for you, David. Mm-hmm. The Iraq has been producing oil. I mean, you know, they're getting it out of there now. But if you denominate, if you were to look at a graph of the cost of oil in U.S. dollars over the last 3 years, say the years of the Bush administration, you would see this steady increase and in fact a spike during and after the Gulf War or the Iraqi War. If, however, you looked at the same chart and pricing oil in euros instead of dollars,
yes,
what you would see is a completely flat line.
So it's been staying the same, yeah, because of the
right.
erosion in the purchasing price of the dollar. Yeah.
So what has happened is that the price of oil has not gone up at all. The dollars that they're getting in the Middle East for oil, or the money that they're getting, because sometimes they're paid in euros, sometimes they're paid in yen, sometimes they're paid in won, sometimes they're paid in dollars. Dollars are the internationally accepted price point definition or whatever. But the amount of spendable income that they're getting from their oil right now is the same as it was 3 years ago in terms of what they can buy with it.
Yes.
And so what has happened is not that the price of oil is going up. And this is where Americans are again being fooled by this administration. It's not that we're seeing an increase in the price of gasoline or an increase in the price of oil. What we're seeing is a decrease in the value of the dollar. And the reason that the dollar is falling in value is because this administration is spending us into bankruptcy and the rest of the world realizes it.
That's a very good point. But you have independent information that indicates that Iraqi oil production is increasing rapidly since the war.
Oh, it's not increasing rapidly, but it's increasing steadily. I think that the oil industry executives who led us into this war, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. I mean, Bush was an oil industry executive. Cheney was an oil industry executive. Condoleezza Rice has a tanker named after her from when she used to work for, was it Exxon or Chevron? I think it was Chevron. Anyhow, they're looking, you know, 5, 10, 15 years out at the interests of the oil industry and the oil corporations who set up, you know, I mean, they were sitting, look at the lawsuit with judicialwatch.org. You can find this on their website. They sued Dick Cheney over that energy meeting back before 9/11 in April of 2001.
Yes, that's right. I've seen that. Yeah.
They sued and they got the documents and they got some of the notes from that meeting. And in that meeting in April of 2001, 6 months before 9/11, they were sitting, they had carved up the oil fields of Iraq. They had come up with the names of countries and companies within those countries that would want to buy which oil from which field, and they were already planning on how they were going to sell this stuff over the next 10 to 15 years. So the yes, there was oil. I believe that there was a war for oil in Iraq, but I don't believe that it was a short-term thing. I think that this was the energy industry, and I'm not saying this is. I don't think this is conspiracy nut stuff because it's borne out by the minutes of their meeting. That, you know, they're looking at, hey, you know, we got to get some more oil. And within the United States government, I think that you had a bunch of neocons who were saying, and we need to stabilize the Middle East. And if we have a strong presence in there, if we put a heavy foot down on one of the countries in the Middle East, we can help stabilize that region, which history tells you every time any country, any European country, for that matter, when we did it. I mean, we went in and did the same thing in Iran. We put in the Shah. Anytime a foreign country goes into the Middle East and says, we're here with our big foot and we're going to keep you guys under control, it blows back in our face. And these guys just, you know, I don't think that, I think that not only do they not learn from history, I don't think they bother to read history.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah. So
I've got a lot of other things to say, but I won't take up all your time today. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, David. Thanks for calling, and call back some other time if you'd like. 1-866-889-8899 is our number. And this is, you know, every now and then you get these ahas. And this one about oil, I got... some months ago, I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, and it was just one of these little, you know, articles that was talking about how the price of oil to Europe has not gone up. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, and there it was, sure enough. The value of the dollar is going down. Here, now, and at the same time that the value of the dollar is going down, and the consequence of this, of course, is going to be inflation in the United States. I mean, it's going to catch up with us within the next year or two. You can take that to the bank. And what that's going to mean, what that's going to do is it's going to burst the housing bubble. It's going to mean people can't borrow against the value of their homes anymore to support their lifestyle because the interest rates are going to go up. And number one, it's going to be more difficult to borrow. It's going to be more expensive to borrow. And number two, you're going to have a lot of people who have adjustable rate mortgages where they're going to see suddenly their house payments going up $50, $100, $200, $300 a month, and they can't afford it. And they're going to have to downsize their house or they won't be able to buy a house. And you're going to see land values collapsing. I mean, we've been through these cycles. I've been through these cycles two or three times that I remember fairly vividly in my adult life. I'm 53. I mean, I remember this. You know, we went through this in the 70s. We're going to see this happen. And that's kind of the only thing that's holding it together. I actually feel kind of sorry for whoever becomes president in 2004 because it is going to be one incredibly big job to clean up the mess that these conservatives have created. And into the midst of this, we see now two-tier... Now I'm gonna step out on a limb here. Actually, I wanna play this Terry McAuliffe clip. I've been trying to get to this all day. Yeah, I'm doing it very quickly. This is just it's not even 30 seconds. Terry McAuliffe commenting on the Republican ads, and the reason I want to play this before I make my comment is because I'm gonna say something that's gonna actually sound like I'm defending George Bush. Here's Terry McAuliffe. I think.
He's going to go up with these ads.
Yeah. Here we go.
George Bush was going to go up with these ads. I think it's a sign of desperation that the president has to go out and campaign so early. But you know what? He can run all the ads he wants. He cannot convince Americans that they have a job when they don't have a job. He can't convince the 43.5 million Americans that they actually have health insurance when they don't have health insurance. You know, we talk about steady leadership in a time of change. You know what's been steady? Job loss has been steady. Deterioration in the environment. We've seen a steady decline in the economic outlook of our country. So this is no surprise to us. We have a nominee of the Democratic Party now. We're ready to go. We're energized. We're going to beat George Bush because George Bush has been wrong for America.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with all of that except for that we're going to beat George Bush. I still think that that's a very open question, frankly. And George Bush spent more than $100 million more than Al Gore did last time around to get his numbers up to where they were so that he could have the Supreme Court hand him the presidency. But he's got more than that this time. He's going to have a huge, huge financial advantage. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be real interesting to see this thing play out. But here's my defense of George Bush. The evisceration, one of those fancy words for disemboweling, actually, is what it means, to cut the guts out. The evisceration of the American middle class did not begin on George W. Bush's watch. It really began with the first year of the Reagan administration. And you go back and you look at the numbers, the actual earning power, the actual spending power of the average wages of the average worker in the middle class of America, starting around 1935, all the way up to 1980, or actually, it's 78, 79, 80, right in that realm, right in that area. But 1980 seems to be a real touchstone point, was rising. Our incomes for the, by our, I mean the middle class, the incomes of the middle class, of working people in America, were steadily rising throughout that period. As a result, in large part, of policies put into place by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it was the and it was Reagan who began this thing. This whole, you know, bringing the religion of conservative economics to government. And laissez-faire capitalism. Just let the corporations run everything. Don't worry, they'll take care of us. Everything will be just fine. And Bill Clinton did some very good things to roll back some of that. But his signing NAFTA and GATT is something I will not forget or forgive. And not only is signing it, I mean, he aggressively worked for it. And why? Because there is a conservative strain in the Democratic Party as well as in the Republican Party. And there are people in the Democratic Party who are either A, in the pockets of corporations, or B, actually believe conservative economics, the conservative economic theory, that if you just let corporations run everything, ultimately everything will be well, and that government is the problem and not the solution, and the government is the enemy, and that corporate leaders are the noble saviors of American democracy. There's actually people in the Democratic Party who believe this. I mean, there's those who are outspoken about it, like Zell Miller. And then there are those who just kind of, I don't know, maybe they weren't paying attention in college when they studied economics, or maybe they never bothered to. So here, this from 1997, Business Week. 1997, the cover story in November of 97. We're in the middle of the tail end, anyway, of the Clinton administration. The article, the cover story in Business Week was called Two-Tiered Marketing. Companies are tailoring their products and pitches to two different Americas. Does this sound familiar? They talk about the Walt Disney Company and Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Remember Winnie the Pooh, A.A. Milne? Disney owns the rights to Winnie the Pooh. And they point out that the Disney Company, and I'll quote from the article here, is carefully marketing two distinct poos. The original line-drawn figure appears on fine china, pewter spoons, and pricey kids' stationery found in upscale specialty and department stores such as Nordstrom's and Bloomingdale's. The plump, cartoon-like poo, clad in a red T-shirt and a goofy smile, adorns plastic keychains, polyester bedsheets, and animated videos. It sells in Walmart stores and Five and Dime shops. Except for at Disney's own stores, the two poos do not share the same retail shelf. Now, why would that be? Tiffany Walmart is called the strategy. Tiffany/Walmart. In other words, that's all there is. You wonder why the Five and Dime in town, why the cores of our cities have been wiped out. It's because the middle class that patronized them is being wiped out. You've got desperately people who are working as hard as they can and trying to make things go, the working poor of America, who have no choice but to shop where the prices are the lowest, which is the Walmart promotion anyway. Not always the case, but very often. And then you've got those people who can shop at Tiffany's. And we're seeing now this, you know, explosion in upscale spending right now because, hey, the investor class only pays 15% income tax now. If you make your money sitting around getting dividend checks, you pay 15% income tax and you pay no payroll tax. But if you work for a living, you pay both. So here Business Week says, in 1997, Tiffany Walmart is a strategy that more of America's business marketers are adopting, and for good reason. I'm quoting from the cover story in Business Week in 1997, November 1997. The middle class, which once seemed to include almost everyone, is knowing in terms of numbers or purchasing power. Instead, it's the top and bottom ends that are swelling. And then they go on through all the details, going all the way back to the 70s when this first started. The early 1980s, when conservative economics suddenly became fashionable and Ronald Reagan came along. 1-866-889-8894. Greg in San Rafael is on the line. Hey, Greg.
Hello, Tom. This is Greg. I am the webmaster of verifiedvoting.org. We've spoken before.
I remember. We've spoken before today.
As your listeners might know, we are the organization that is lobbying for legislation that would help to resolve the paperless electronic voting machine problem.
Oh, I understand. And Greg, we've only got about a minute here left in this segment.
Okay, so we have had a Senate bill introduced back in December, and we're asking for folks to make a big press on the Senate bill S-1980. S-1980 is a complementary bill to H.R. 2239. That bill has a lot of co-sponsors on it now. It's got 125.
So contact your senators.
Ready to get those things passed.
Great. Okay, good. Good on you, Greg. Congratulations. Senate Bill 1980. Call your senator and let him know. 10 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single
single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. Special thanks to our web streamer today. RadioPower.org is the radio station on the internet, a listener-supported radio station on the web that pretty much exclusively carries this program. And I mean, from our point of view, they're our exclusive webcaster. Yeah, they carry a number of other excellent programs, and they're certainly worthy of your support. So I want to let you know about that. RadioPower.org, you can check it out on the internet. You find links to it at TomHartman.com. Click Listen Live. And thanks to Louise for producing the show today. Thanks for the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to Roberta for calling. Hey, Roberta, you're on the air.
Hey, bueno, compañero. Blockbuster with Bernie today. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And thanks for the chance. I want to apologize about the Nader thing. It's true, he got 6%, and you explained the electoral process very well and the dynamics. I wanted to listen to him because I thought it was important to hear a dialogue when Dean dropped down to keep the dialogue alive.
Well, that's what Dennis Kucinich was doing, and he was doing it within the Democratic Party, and I think that's where it needs to be happening.
I'm just wondering if Nader isn't a pigeon for the shadow government without realizing it.
Well, without realizing it, certainly. I mean, you know, there were a couple of well-documented cases in the last election where the Republicans were actually feeding money to Green Party candidates, particularly Ralph Nader, in various races where they knew that it would tip the race. But I mean, you know, that's just politics. That doesn't make Nader or the Greens
bad.
But
I never really thought I'd vote for him. But I see it as dangerous.
Yeah.
And I thank you for keeping us aware, Paul Revere, once again.
Yeah.
Tom, I also want to thank you for doing the thing on John Adams, for calling a fascist a fascist.
Yeah.
And keep that alive. I just wondered, do you call that revisionist history when there's a whitewash and history being written from the view of the conqueror?
Yeah, I'm just astounded. You know, this John Adams biography that actually, has won all these awards and how I'm not sure I'd call it revisionism, but it's wrong. You know, revisionism has very specific meaning, and I'm not sure that this is quite that. But historians are pretty good.
Thanks again, compañero, and we love you, and keep on, and please be careful.
Yeah, okay, I'll do my best.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Roberta. Thanks for the call. Well, it's been a great show today. Thanks for showing up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for participating, those of you who called in. Have a great weekend. Tune in next week. Same time, same place. We'll see you here then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
A citizen seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.